GitHub Actions with Damian Brady.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and to run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. This podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. They are hiring architects and .NET engineers who'd like a path to become an architect. So you can go to clearmeasure.com/careers for that. My guest today on the show is a returning guest, Damian Brady. He's a developer advocate at GitHub, and he's a developer speaker and author specializing in DevOps, MLOps, developer process, and software architecture. Formerly a cloud advocate at Microsoft for 4 years, and prior to that, a developer at Octopus Deploy, and he's also been a Microsoft MVP. He has a over 20-year background in software development and consulting in a broad range of industries. And in Australia, he co-organized the Brisbane .NET User Group and launched the annual DDD Brisbane Conference. It stands for Domain-Driven Design. And Damian Brady was on the show on the Azure DevOps podcast way back in episode number 8. And so we'll include a link in the show notes for that. But Damian, welcome back to the show. How are you, sir?
Thanks. I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. It's been a long time since you've been back on the show, but a lot's changed in your world since then.
Yeah, show number 8. That's a long time.
That was 2018. Wow. I mean, Microsoft acquired GitHub. I mean, just in that time frame, really. And a whole lot's changed. But before we kind of dive into GitHub Actions, just so the listeners can hear, what is the organization now with GitHub and Microsoft? And there's a lot that's together, but at the same time, there's a lot that's separate. How would you describe that landscape?
That's a pretty accurate summary, really. I mean, GitHub is still relatively independent in the way that they operate and they do their work. So we are owned by Microsoft. So Microsoft acquired GitHub. So right through our CEO, once you get to our CEO's level, it starts to go back up through Microsoft at that point. But inside GitHub, we try to be a little bit more agnostic around cloud providers and platforms and things like that. So we use plenty of Microsoft tooling and plenty of tooling that's not Microsoft. We have systems and features and all sorts of stuff that supports Azure, but it also supports AWS and GCP and all of the other options as well. And we try as much as we can to kind of be where the developers are, regardless of which platform they're at or which ecosystem they live in. So yeah, it is an interesting relationship, I guess. We definitely, and personally, because I work for Microsoft, but we definitely love Microsoft stuff, but we want to make sure that everything GitHub works really well with everyone else as well.
Yeah. And just want to touch on a little bit of your background as we dive into GitHub Actions. In part of your bio, you worked at Octopus Deploy for a period of time. And I mean, you and I did some webinars back then, but you've just been all over the automated deployment space and where ops meets dev. What is it about that space that kind of really captures your imagination, that really pumps you up? Whereas, you know, some people say, no, I just want to write code. And they're talking about, the latest framework for screens and all that. But you spent a lot of time. What is it about that just jazzes you up?
I don't know. I definitely get that as well. I have spent some time where I'm like, I just want to write code. I think there was a number of people I worked with at one point where, you know, the bottleneck is not writing the code, or the path to success for the company is not, you know, cutting code as fast as possible and as elegantly as possible. In those instances, like, I think I saw that the path to success would be mapped out by how quickly these features could be put in production and tested in the hands of real people. And I might have been similar to plenty of other people who have entered into DevOps in that, you know, nobody was really doing that work in that projector in that organization. And so I fell into it. But I really enjoyed that process of putting that pipeline together, or putting that kind of end-to-end process together, so that when you do write code, the path to production is a lot cleaner and safer and more reproducible and faster. So yeah, I used to joke when I was at Octopus Deploy, the best jokes are based on truth, right? That when I joined, I think I was employee number 5 or 6. And I think at the time I joked that I was about the 5th best programmer in that company. And then the company grew to about, I don't know, 30 or 40 when I left. And I think I was the, you know, 28th best programmer in that company. But, and that's been the case a little bit. I mean, I'm decent at writing code, but I think what I found I was better at was making sure that what was being written could be put in production in a nice way. And I don't know, I really just enjoy closing that loop, I guess.
Yeah, nice. Well, that work is hugely important, because if we can't get it in production then it's kind of all for naught.
Exactly. Yep.
Let's talk about through GitHub Actions. We've had other shows where we talk about it. Chris Patterson's been on the show and others, but the current lay of the land of GitHub Actions, how would you describe it today in 2022? And what is it perfect and mature for right now? And what are the things where, hey, maybe there's some active development going on?
Yeah. So the original purpose, and you probably got this from Chris Patterson in a much more succinct way, but the original purpose of Actions was really just to be an automation platform. And you could definitely do your builds. You could do CI and do automated builds. Deployment, the deployment story was fine as long as you just wanted to deploy directly to an environment. But originally the maturity around deploying to multiple environments and having an approvals process and things like that, those features weren't really there until relatively recently. And I say relatively recently, we're talking about, last year or two. These days, there's a lot more focus on that kind of enterprise-y story, where you do want those controls to go through your environments, build your software, make sure it's compliant and secure and all that kind of stuff, but then be able to deploy to environments and have people tick those boxes to approve them going into those environments. And to that end, there's been some kind of first-class features added to GitHub Actions, like environments and environment protection and branch protection and all sorts of stuff around that, to make sure that governance, that compliance is in place as well. So there's been a bit more of a focus on that. That said, we still kind of focus on the use case that, that most people fall into. So if you have some complex scenarios where you want to deploy to a particular environment and then automatically check, third-party services to work out whether that's performing correctly in your blue side of your blue-green deployment, and then automatically promote that and roll it out, you can do that with GitHub Actions, but the first-party support for that, or the first-class support for that, isn't really there. We're kind of hitting the majority of the features. Does a team need to approve before it goes into production, or can it go straight in? Can you deploy from your main branch? Sorry, from your dev branches or your feature branches, or can you only go to production from your main branch? So those kind of low-hanging fruit, or the big rocks, I guess, is what we've been aiming at. So that's for mature processes that are fairly straightforward, where you need approvals to go into different environments and you want to protect those environments. GitHub Actions does a great job these days. If it's an extremely complex scenario, or you want to run through a number of automated gates and checks and things like that, then you can do it, but it's going to require a little bit of work.
Okay. Maybe we could take the listeners through just kind of the mainline scenario on its way to production, where you have a team build and then maybe a series, there's just 3 environments, like really small and just sequential. And then now you're in production and things are running, and what that looks like. So for starters, is all of that modeled in one workflow file? How many workflow files, and how is it typically split up if you're doing the build, but then also doing a series of deployments and maybe some automated test runs on the way?
Yeah. So typically and traditionally, I guess, with GitHub Actions, everything is kind of in the one workflow, like that entire pipeline from I'm going to do my build all the way through to going in production. That's not to say that everything runs, not concurrently, but, sequentially. You can the way I generally structure it personally would be a CI build job. So the workflows are made up of a number of different jobs that can run in parallel or run in sequence, so they can depend on each other. So I would generally have a CI job, which does the build, and the result of that build would be an artifact, a thing that we want to deploy to our environments, whether that's a zipped up package or a folder of files or something, essentially.
Does GitHub have a package repository, or what does that look like?
There's a couple of ways of doing it. You can upload it to the workflow run itself. So when that workflow runs, you can say, I want to upload an artifact. And then when you have a look at the results of that run later on, there are files attached to it. That's really handy if you're working inside that same workflow run as well. So if you have a CI and then a deploy to staging, deploy to production or something like that, each of those jobs can pull down the artifacts from that run. And it's very straightforward. You don't need to worry about credentials or anything like that. So that's one way of doing it. If you were to separate your workflows, or you want to use those resources in a different workflow, let's say you're building a library that you use in a number of projects, then there's GitHub Packages, which is a package manager built into GitHub. It's similar to, if you built a Docker container pushing that image to Docker Hub, but it's built into GitHub. The big advantage of that, I guess, is the credentials and the permissions that the job runs as, or the actions workflow runs as, should have, or you can give that permissions to your GitHub packages repository as well. So you can just say, hey, I want to go and get this package. And provided your workflow has permission to do that, it will just pull it down.
Is it similar to Azure Artifacts, where it's basically hosting a different number of package servers?
Yeah, it is very similar. The credentials and the way you access it is pretty similar if you're familiar with the one in Azure DevOps, in that you generally have to use those credentials to get the access. I can't remember whether the one in Azure DevOps allows you to pull them from outside of Azure DevOps.
It does, because the way integrating Octopus Deploy to Azure pipelines, Octopus Deploy can call over to the NuGet server in Azure Artifacts.
Yep.
So it is externally addressable.
Okay. And I'm fairly sure, I probably need to look this up before being quoted on it, but I'm fairly sure the GitHub Package Manager is intended to be an internal repository. You can probably get hold of files if you have GitHub credentials from outside, but the intention really is, this is a package and an artifact or something that I need in my GitHub environment, I guess. For example, you can have an image that you use as your CodeSpaces image if you're using CodeSpaces, and that can be hosted inside GitHub packages. That's not something you'd want to make public. You don't want everybody using your SOE, standard operating environment, for your dev.
So does it literally host also an NPM repository and a NuGet repository within it?
Yeah, it does. I don't think it has quite the range of the Azure DevOps packages. I know for a fact, unless this has changed in the last little while, I probably should look it up, that there's no universal package repository. So I think in Azure DevOps, you can say, here's some files.
Yeah, zip files.
Call them this, and it'll just store it. It's a little bit more targeted. It's expecting you to upload NPM packages or Docker images or a whole bunch of them, actually. So there's quite a few in there. But I'm just having a look now, actually, just so I'm not lying to anybody. Yeah, so there's a number of different ones. So Maven, what do we got? Maven, NPM, Docker, NuGet, and Ruby are the kind of standard ones. And Gradle. And
so for your build, you can keep them as just artifacts that are for that particular workflow, or you can create a package and put it into one of those package repositories for later retrieval.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. All right.
So we've got our release candidates now, things that are ready for deployment. So what does it look like to transition to deploying to that, first pre-production environment in your chain?
Yeah. So if you're doing a CI, CD kind of environment, the first job would be that CI, that build. We'd end up with the artifact, and then you would have a subsequent job defined in that same workflow file to deploy to your test environment, for example. When you write the YAML, so all of the workflow definitions are in YAML format. When you write that YAML, you can give it a couple of instructions. You can say, this job needs the build job, in which case it won't run in parallel. It'll wait until that build job is complete, and then you know that you can pull down that file. And the first task in that job would be, you know, pull down that file. And that's important because each job runs in its own independent machine instance. So there's a few reasons it does that. One is that you may have different jobs in that same workflow that run on different operating systems. So maybe you want to compile your application in Linux and then, you know, actually deploy it to an IIS server. And to do that, it's better to run it on a Windows agent. So you you do it over there. So you have that dependency. You say needs, you know, build or whatever the name of that first job is. But then you can also define that this is going to an environment. And so environments is a first-class citizen inside GitHub. It's available for all public projects. And I think private projects, you need to be using GitHub Enterprise to make use of this. But an environment is basically a definition of a place that you are going to deploy stuff to. So in your repository, you could define an environment called staging, an environment called test, an environment called production. Mm-hmm. But then you can add some protection to those environments too. So you might want to say, for any job that targets my production environment, before it goes in there, I need somebody from this team to approve it. Or before it goes in there in a workflow, I need you to wait 6 hours. So it's not going to go directly from staging to production. You can also restrict the branches that you can deploy to. So you could say my production environment can only have deployments from the main branch. Or you might want to say it can only have deployments from a branch that is protected, which means a branch that, you know, has gone through a number of policies before you can commit to it. So quite often people will say they're protecting their main branch, mm-hmm. which means that you have to submit a pull request and it has to go through a pull request process before it hits the main branch. No direct commits. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So you can protect in that way as well. The other thing that you can tie to environments is secrets. So secrets work in a similar way to a lot of other CI/CD platforms, where it's kind of in GitHub's case, it's a write-only encrypted secret store. So you would put in something like your Azure publishing profile, for example. Mm-hmm. And so you would set a secret, give it a name, and then set that publishing profile content as the value. And once it's saved, you can't pull it back out again. You can override it, but you can't read from it in normal day-to-day.
Yeah.
But your action can use that value as it's working. So your deployment, you may have a deployment job that says, right, step one would be pull down the artifact from this workflow or from GitHub packages. Step two might be, I don't know, write some config or change some config or something along those lines. And then step three might be deploy to Azure. And because you're in the staging environment, you can use the secret value for your staging environment, for your Azure publishing profile.
And what do the non-secret variables look like?
So in general, non-secret variables, we put them in the repository. So anything you put in secrets is encrypted. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a little bit case by case. Some people like to put everything in the secrets, but and never put anything that you'd use as a variable in code. Some people put some of that stuff in environment variables defined in that YAML, in that workflow. So that's probably the most common way of putting things that aren't secret. You define them in that YAML workflow as environment variables. But there's no equivalent to Azure DevOps's or Azure Pipelines like non-secret variables. So ones that you can just see and edit. Yeah.
Or you can kind of see the difference of the changes between them environment to environment.
Yep. Yeah. It's fairly basic. It's fairly straightforward that if you store something in secrets, then it's a black hole.
So for regular variables, YAML is a code file and you just put a variable in the code file.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, you wouldn't want to put things like, you know, your Azure credentials in that because then it's living in your repository. If somebody clones your repo, it's right there.
That's right. Every developer, if it's not in secrets, every developer that clones your repository is going to see it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly right.
Okay.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
So let's say we've deployed to our test environment and it's used the Azure Publishing Profile secret attached to that test environment, but there's no protections on it, which means as soon as that CI, the build step completes, you'll deploy to test. And then maybe your staging environment has an approval from a particular team. At that point, the workflow run will stop and it will just wait for that approval or wait for whatever that protection is, essentially. If it's a branch protection, so let's say you've run this workflow from targeting a feature branch, and then your staging environment says, I can only go from my main branch, then at that point, you just can't continue. It stops. That's the end of the workflow. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, yeah, if you can go on, but it's waiting for an approval, it'll just stop and wait for that approval.
Okay.
The amount of time that it can sit there waiting is configurable, but we do have limits on that. I can't remember off the top of my head what they are, but they're quite long. So I think if it's waiting for longer than a month, it's probably going to stop. But there's no processing that's really going on at that point. It's paused. So you're not playing, you're not paying action minutes because you're in between jobs at that point.
Yeah. And speaking of action minutes, this pool of machines, I think when GitHub was acquired and it was coming up, there was talk of the same pool of computers that Azure Pipelines was using. To what extent is there still overlap and where is it deviated?
Yeah, there is a bit of overlap. The actual machine definitions themselves are very, very similar, if not the same. I can't remember what state we're actually at, but if you
all in Azure, right? Or are they GCP or AWS?
No, I believe they're all in Azure now. So yeah, they live in, I think we have them across a few regions, but at the moment, I don't believe you can change what region your workflow will run in. It will just run in one of our regions. There is some work going on around that, but it's early days. So there's not really anything I can tell you there, I'm afraid. Yeah. But as far as I know, all of the runners are in Azure. That said, you can self-host your own runners. And there's a couple of ways you can do that, actually. You can self-host on any number of, like some huge number of platforms. You could feasibly have a GitHub Actions runner running on a Raspberry Pi that's sitting on your desk, for example, and run the work on that. There was some feature released a while ago, which would allow you to listen to events, things like, hey, I have a job that needs to run on an agent that has, or a runner that has this particular label or this particular tag. Mm-hmm. And you could tie into that event and have kind of the ability to spin up those environments. So you'd have these ephemeral runners that would basically spin up infrastructure to run a job and then tear it down afterwards, which is really handy for potentially long running or expensive jobs that you don't do that often, which can happen sometimes in ML. So maybe every month you actually want to run, you know, a decent workflow that does a whole bunch of training for a few hours. In that case, you don't have to have the machine sitting around. You can tie into those events and spin them up and tear them down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the frustrations that people have with Azure Pipelines and the hosted agents is that for jobs that take a very small amount of time, the wait time for spinning up that agent and just waiting for it to start running yours could be the same, you know. And so with GitHub using the same infrastructure and spinning it up, is there a way to, for a development team to say, I'm okay with paying for, you know, two or three agents all day during our workday just so that we don't wait for that time ever? Or is that not available?
It'd be pretty much the same. I think the way to do that really would be to run your own infrastructure, run your own agents on that infrastructure. Because the other thing you don't get to choose at the moment, and this is just at the moment, is the size of these machines that does that compute for you.
Yeah, that's right.
We are, hopefully I'm not spoiling anything here, but we are looking at adding the ability to choose the size of these runners as well. So you can say, hey, I actually want a machine that has a ton of RAM because I know that that's required for my build. So use one of those agents rather than just picking the operating system. At the moment, the way to do that is to run your own infrastructure. And you know, having cloud VMs and things for build agents is not an uncommon practice. It can also help if you need to do things inside your own network, then having a runner that runs inside your network because it reaches out to GitHub. So you don't need to worry about opening ports and things like that so much. It'll reach out to GitHub for that connection. It means that you can talk to SQL servers in your environment or, you know, use credentials that are internal to your network and things like that. So that's the other reason people might do.
Because you're in your network.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly right.
Okay. So just as a corollary with Azure Pipelines, the steps that come, you know, out of the box, for instance, would be like, hey, grab a deployable NuGet package from Azure Artifacts and then throw it up to App Service. And they have, you know, built in out of the box, you just put a few variables and that's all you have to do. What do the steps look like when you're deploying, let's say to that, you know, you got Azure App Service website and you got a SQL Server database. What do the steps look like? And are they in the marketplace like that? Yeah. Or are you running command lines?
So those are the two options, really. There's actions that are in the marketplace, and then you can also run your own scripts. You could, of course, write your own actions. They're not that hard to do. And there's a few kind of benefits to the way that GitHub Actions works that makes writing your own easy. At time of recording, there's about 14,300 actions in the marketplace. And these aren't paid actions. The only way you would pay for these to use these actions would be if you're calling a third-party service that you're paying for, but that's not paying for it through GitHub. All of these actions are, you know, free to just kind of use. Obviously, with that number, it's good and bad, right? If you want to do something pretty standard and there's 40 different actions to do it, which one do you choose? So you can look for ones that have a lot of stars and ones that are from verified publishers. So for example, if you wanted to deploy to Azure, Azure has a ton of actions that they publish. And so the example you said before of deploying to App Service, then there's a very clear App Service deployment action from Azure that you would use. And other than that, it looks very much the same as pipelines.
Okay.
It's a slightly different syntax with the YAML, but ultimately you're saying, I want to use this action, and you can pin it to a version of that action just in case you don't want upgrades to break things unexpectedly. And so you can pin it to a version and say, I want to use this action to do my work. And, you know, here are the variables that I'm going to pass you, things like publishing profiles, for example. And so other than that, it'd be quite similar to the way that pipelines works.
So it sounds like the guts is all there of, you know, building and deploying to a multiple environments in a chain with Azure Pipelines, Octopus Deploy. There's a dashboard where you can see a line of, you know, the number of your environments over and what release candidates, what build numbers are deployed to what environments. What do you see in GitHub Actions when you have all this built out?
Yeah, so you can have a look at what's in each of these environments as well. So you can see, we said that setting up the environments before, and then you could have different jobs that target those environments. That information gets tracked. So you can see, this was the workflow run that deployed to this production environment on this date, triggered by this person. You can drill in and see it was approved by this person at this time. Mm-hmm. Here's the comment that they left. But also, you know, the CI build was triggered based on this commit, and that commit is tied to the issue that was in GitHub. And this is the, you know, just the big discussion that happened with that issue. You know, here's the pull request that's linked to that issue. So you get that kind of traceability all the way through. Having a look at what's in each environment, though, I don't think it's going to be as comprehensive as something like Octopus, but you will be able to see, you know, my production environment had these workflow runs happen at these particular times. The environments themselves are set at a repository level as well. So if you had effectively the same production environment across five different projects, that's going to appear in five different places. There's no kind of roll up of the same production environment across your projects at the moment, or across your repositories at the moment. In which case, something like Octopus, I think, you know, you'd have that environment as kind of a separate entity that is linked to the different workflows as well. So yeah, it's built around, I mean, we're building around kind of the pretty core experience where you have a project that you're deploying to multiple environments and you just want to see which ones went to which environments at what time and mm-hmm. what's in them and that kind of connection right back to the idea. Ideally.
Yeah. Okay. As we wrap up here, this is kind of, it's all new, but do you have a sense for how many people are using this for deployments versus just for builds? Internally, do you consider it, hey, we're driving adoption, we want more and more people to use it? Or as you talk internally, is it, oh, we need to work on support questions because tons of people are using it and these are the questions they're generating?
Yeah, I'm largely going from anecdata here. I know for a fact that the Actions engineering team would have a lot of stats. So if Chris was on the call, I'm sure he'd be able to give you some numbers and things like that, or at least he'd give you some better ideas. My understanding is that a lot of people are using it for their builds. The deployments, not quite as much. And I think partly that's an education thing. There was, as I mentioned earlier, there was a period of time where the deployment story was just not really there. Mm-hmm. So you would defer the deployment to another service like Octopus or something like that. The features to allow you to kind of control your deployments through environments have been there for a little while. And so I think it's really on us to communicate that better. But it's difficult to, if somebody has an idea of what GitHub Actions can do, getting their attention to say, well, actually it can do all these other things now. That's a hard task. And that's firmly in my wheelhouse as somebody in developer relations. But yeah, we have had little campaigns going to try and raise awareness of the fact that we Actions can do CD really well and deploy, you know, right from Actions without needing a third-party service. But I think you're right in that a lot of people are using it for build, like a huge number of people are using it for build. The number of minutes that we use at any one time is gigantic. The actual deployments themselves is not quite as high.
Yeah. Well, I'll confess that I'm using it for builds in various places and it's just drop dead simple for that scenario.
So. Yeah. And I mean, it's worth mentioning as well that Actions is not just for builds as well. I mean, that there's a lot of other things that Actions can do, you know, from responding automatically to issues to kind of, I don't know, notifying you when somebody forks your repository to doing all sorts of other stuff as well. So CI is just one part of it. And then the continuous deployment stuff is you know, another part of what it can do. So there's a lot of stuff that can happen as a result of you know, Actions workflows running.
Yeah. And there's so many different types of software as well. Like for instance, even Azure Pipelines, it's paired with app service for mobile apps, you know, Android and iPhone apps, and with the new Maui release and more people doing the smartphone apps, pushing to app stores and checking on crash reports and things that are mobile specific. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still that App Center product that, you know, Microsoft acquired that used to be called Hockey App. So,
I remember that.
Are there discussions of trying to get some platform or target specific features into Actions, or is it more, you know what? No, there's other products. We're probably not going to invest to that extent. We're just going to integrate with them.
Yeah, there's some discussions. I mean, we work pretty hard to make sure that Actions is going to work across a lot of different platforms and a lot of different services. To a large extent, though, just because of the huge range of things that you can do and places you can deploy to and platforms you can use, we find that it's largely those platforms or those organizations that are building those actions, you know, to do that work. So the focus is on making it kind of easy to write those actions so that those teams can do it. I know, like a couple of examples, Octopus Deploy has actions that know how to communicate with Octopus Deploy. Yeah. And that was the team at Octopus that did that work. Similarly, all the actions for Azure were written by Azure. They weren't written by GitHub people. We have seen as well, and Octopus is another good example, where people have written tools to generate GitHub Actions workflows to integrate with their services. So Octopus actually has a tool. I can't remember the URL, but I'm sure if you ask one of those guys, they'd be able to give it to you, which will, it'll generate a GitHub Actions workflow in its entirety when you point it at a project, like a .NET project, and it'll say, here's what you need to put in your Actions workflow definition to work with Octopus Deploy. I was kind of gratified to see, I think, the single web app, a single page web app stuff that's happened over at Microsoft as well. There's even command line stuff which will generate a GitHub Actions workflow file for your for your project. And so that's the way, you know, they've set up. You say, I want to deploy this thing, and it says, okay, great, here's an Actions workflow.
Nice.
Which is, I mean, I love the way that they're doing that. It's great for us as well. But yeah.
For sure. And the fact that it's stored in the Git repository is a huge architectural step. I mean, before when it was global on various tools, and because you branch, and oftentimes when you make a change on a branch, you have to tweak something with the way you're building or deploying. And if it's not, huge. Yeah.
So you have to advantage. You have to choose whether to break your build or break your code.
Right.
I suppose at a time, before you fix it. So definitely. And even, I mean, the fact that somebody can clone your repository and know not just what your code looks like and what it does, but how your code is built, how it's deployed, can be hugely beneficial.
Yeah. Well, Damien, thanks so much for coming back on the show. It's a long time coming, but I appreciate all the updates on GitHub Actions.
Yeah, of course. It was fun. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.